Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Grace Kochling. On June 25th, in a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court issued the majority opinion, penned by Justice Alito, the case Department of Homeland Security v. Thurisingham. The court reversed and remanded the case to the courts below, holding that, as applied in this case, Title 8 of the U.S. Code, Section 1252, Subsection E, Subsection 2, which limits the habeas review obtainable by a non-citizen detained for expedited removal, does not violate the suspension or due process clauses. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion. Justice Breyer filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, in which Justice Ginsburg joined. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion, in which Justice Kagan joined. And now, to discuss the case, we have O.H. Skinner, Arizona Solicitor General.
Thank you so much. So the Thurisingham case is interesting on a couple different levels. To give a little bit of background, some of you on the call may be immigration law experts, or at least prior to my current role, I was not. This is a case in which a Sri Lankan national, Vijay Thurisingham, came into the United States from Mexico without lawful papers and was apprehended within 25 yards of the American border in a very short period of time. I don't remember the exact time frame, but let's just call it within minutes. And in such a case, there's normally an expedited removal procedure where anybody who is caught in such a manner is immediately turned around and sent elsewhere. Interestingly, in this case, it would have probably been an airplane back to Sri Lanka. But Vijay Thurisingham instead said that he wanted to go through the asylum process. Now, as we all have witnessed in recent years, the asylum process is perhaps one of the most fraught parts of the current, less current because of COVID, but the ongoing problems on the southern border, because a large number of people coming across the border illegally claim asylum, and that asylum process can be a slow and long process. So the expedited removal procedures at issue that Thurisingham went through are intentionally designed by Congress to help alleviate the problems of that process. So relevant here, what will occur when somebody like Thurisingham says that they would like to apply for asylum is they need to show a credible fear of returning in terms of returning to their former country. There's an initial asylum officer interview in the field. If there is no credible fear determination made, if the officer determines that there is no credible fear that has been demonstrated, then a supervisor can review that determination, and then ultimately Thurisingham or anybody else in his stead can go to before an immigration judge who determines whether or not, as a de novo basis, the field officers made the appropriate decision. This all occurs very quickly. It should be noted that a large percentage of asylum seekers trigger on at least one of those three levels, either at the asylum officer, the supervisor level, or the immigration judge level. The majority opinion by Justice Alito notes that it's something approaching 75% trigger at one of those levels. Now, Thurisingham was one of the people who failed at all three levels. The asylum officer did not believe there was a credible fear. The supervisor did not believe that there was a credible fear. And the immigration judge did not believe that there was a credible fear. Now, 8 U.S.C. 1252 E2 includes a bar on habeas review for determinations like this. So once you are done with your three different levels of review, you don't get to go to court further. You don't get to file a habeas. You don't get to seek any sort of post-conviction style relief or otherwise a review of those credibility determinations, because the whole purpose is that this is an expedited removal procedure for a type of entrant for whom Congress has decided you get these three strikes and you're out, three levels of review. So Nonetheless, Thrasingham goes to court, seeks to obtain habeas review, and overturn the determination of no credible fear, loses in the district court. The Ninth Circuit decides that, in fact, notwithstanding the plain language of 8 U.S.C. 1252 E2 and its bar on habeas, that statutory bar on habeas, in fact, violated the suspension clause of the Constitution by depriving Thrasingham of the right to the writ to habeas corpus. And that it violated his due process rights because he had rights in this space and they were violated because he was going to be shipped out of the country without adequate due process and judicial review. It's a very high-level summary of the background of this case. What's fascinating about this opinion is that it simultaneously touches on some very intricate areas of law and also has potentially very sweeping it could be very sweeping in the immigration space. So at a very high level, things that are important to flag about this opinion are that it effectively resets suspension clause jurisprudence. There was a lot of this jurisprudence in the 2004 to 2008 period of time, much of it related to Guantanamo, much of it related to the war on terror, and you saw opinions in the kind of Kennedy era of the court that were providing us an expanded view of the right for a detainee to go to court, for a foreigner to go to court and vindicate rights and obtain review and potential release. For all of you who are earnest members of the Federalist Society, some of this was a key part of Attorney General Barr's speech to the Federalist Society this last fall in D.C. at the National Lawyers Convention, discussing his view that this was an incredible overreach by the court to begin providing extra rights to those who had taken up arms against the United States. This is a very controversial era of suspension clause jurisprudence. And what you see here in the Thrasingham decision is a crucial first statement of what is likely to be the post-Kennedy era view of the suspension clause. So what you have here is Justice Alito writing for the five justice majority in terms of the opinion, saying that the scope of the writ at the founding of the country is what was preserved by this with the suspension clause. And here he says there's no history of the writ being used to obtain anything other than release. This is crucial because the big fight here is Thrasingham does not want to just be released from immigration detention. The United States of America is happy to release him outside the United States of America. What he wants is the ability to obtain additional judicial review in hopes that his initial judicial review will allow him to stay in America while an asylum claim is pending, perhaps be let out of detention during that process, even though he would still be, you know, in some legal sense detained. And Justice Alito takes a very formalist, very traditional, very historical view that says the suspension clause, as it was enacted in the Constitution, protects the writ at the founding. The writ at the founding was designed to let you out of unlawful detention. It was not allowed, it was not a tool to obtain additional judicial process, additional review, or to stay in the country. That's a very strong locking in of the historical view of the writ. Now, the dissent by Justice Sotomayor goes at great length talking about how this ignores the Boumediene decision from the Guantanamo era, and it ignores statements in that decision about how there's kind of an amorphous nature to what the writ means and what you can get from the writ. Justice Breyer, in the concurrence and the judgment here, he and Justice Ginsburg concur in the judgment that Thrasingham does not get to challenge his detention because of where he was captured, 25 yards from the border, but is unwilling to go as far as the five-justice majority in really locking in what the suspension clause means. So you can really see here that this is a five-justice majority making a crucial first statement in the post-Kennedy era and cabining back, or at least setting the meets and bounds on the ground to ensure that the suspension clause is tied to the original understanding of the writ, the original understanding of who got to access the writ. There's a great discussion in here about historical cases ranging from the United Kingdom to America. It's a very interesting historical opinion. Separately, you have the due process part of this opinion. Now, the due process part, I think, is its own self, is in its own right very interesting and pairs with the USAID opinion by Justice Kavanaugh that came out, I believe, the next day, that is really talking about the due process rights for foreigners or due process rights for foreign organizations. And again, first time you're seeing a post-Kennedy statement that starts to cabin in those due process rights. So here you have the a focus on the lack of the U.S. ties for somebody in Thrasingham's position. So there's a lot of discussion about the fact that he's only 25 yards into the country. He doesn't have longstanding ties to the country. He doesn't have a longstanding experience or connections to the United States. There's a lot of broad language in Justice Alito's five-justice opinion about how that's true, but then goes on to say the formal status of an illegal entrant means that the illegal entrant is never legally in the United States, is always kind of technically outside of America, even if they're traveling to the country for years. So on the one hand, there's an emphasis on 25 yards. On the other hand, there's an emphasis on you're never really here with formal ties because you were never allowed into the country. So that ends up being it's a very short discussion in terms of due process compared to the suspension clause, but it's very consequential because it's probably where I think you're going to see a little bit more of the litigation going forward. So on a going forward basis, I think the most likely thing you're going to see, and I'm not Nostradamus here, is a lot of play around what ties are necessary to trigger due process protection in the border context. So Justice Sotomayor says, oh, this case is limited to 25 feet from the border. Pretty sure she just misquoted feet to yards. This is limited to 25 feet from the border and somebody who has no existing ties to the country. Like I said, there's a lot of parts of the Justice Alito's opinion that don't go that far. They go a lot further and they say, no, it's not tied to 25 yards. It's about your status. You can see, so Justice Breyer and Justice Ginsburg, kind of the older generation of the more liberal side of the court, they agreed in the judgment here because they agreed that 25 yards a few minutes after you've entered the country, you don't have the ability to access due process and habeas here. But they leave open the idea that what if it was further? What if it was longer? So this is really, you know, technically this is a 7-2 outcome, but it's really a 5-justice majority that's setting the meets and bounds of the law in this area. And this is a crucially important opinion because of the case books will talk about it from the perspective of rewriting or resetting the suspension clause jurisprudence. But you will also have the immigration context, and the immigration context will be deeply meaningful because of that due process part. But it will also be very meaningful because this is a crucial part of how the federal government deals with the border. There were only 3 amicus briefs on the merits in this case in support of the United States. One of them was by Attorney General Brnovich here in Arizona. And what that brief really flagged is that the states can't police the border themselves. It's been very well set forth. The federal government has to do it, and the asylum process, including a dramatic increase in unsuccessful asylum applications, asylum claims that seem pretty woeful on their face, is overwhelming the border. And that was one of the key things that was producing a breakdown in the traditional structures, because expedited removal is supposed to be a way to help ensure that the most valid people are getting process and that the rest of the border doesn't just collapse under the weight of people coming in and just saying, aha, asylum. So there's a lot in General Brnovich's brief talking about the flood at the border, the number of asylum claims, and the burden that asylum seekers can place on border states as they are processed and then released with hopes of coming back for another hearing. So this ends up could have a very substantial effect on the percentage of asylum seekers who are deemed to have no credible belief or no credible fear and no viable path in the asylum process. So you should see immediate effects on the ground. you're going to see a lot of litigation over how far into the country and how long before due process gets triggered for somebody in this case. And you're going to see that this could end up having consequences for any future suspension clause litigation, given the fact that it is the first post-Kennedy reset. Again, this is really something where you can see a teeing up of a future fight in the two-justice dissent and in the five-justice majority, with the two justices who concur in the outcome, really saying, well, we agree with the majority on the facts here, but we're not nearly as comfortable with their reasoning, and we don't think we should say more. Let's hope to live to fight another day. And I think that's really where this case is going to end up playing out in the future.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.